Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of A Maze of Death by Philip K. Dick, performed by Benjamin Darcy. Author's foreword. The theology in this novel is not an analog of any known religion. It stems from an attempt made by William Serrell and myself to develop an abstract, logical system of religious thought based on the arbitrary postulate that God exists. I should say, too, that the late Bishop James A. Pike, in discussions with me, brought forth a wealth of theological material for my inspection, none of which I was previously acquainted with. In the novel, Maggie Walsh's experiences after death are based on an LSD experience of my own, in exact detail. The approach in this novel is highly subjective. By that I mean that at any given time, reality is seen, not directly, but indirectly, i.e. through the mind of one of the characters. This viewpoint mind differs from section to section, although most of the events are seen through Seth Morley's psyche. All material concerning Wotan and the death of the gods is based on Richard Wagner's version of Der Ring des Nibelungen, rather than on the original body of myths. Answers to questions put to the Tench were derived from the I Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes. Tekel Upharsin is Aramaic for, he has weighed and now they divide. Aramaic was the tongue that Christ spoke. There should be more like him. 1. His job, as always, bored him. So he had during the previous week gone to the ship's transmitter and attached conduits to the permanent electrodes extending from his pineal gland. The conduits had carried his prayer to the transmitter, and from there the prayer had gone into the nearest relay network. His prayer, during these days, had bounced throughout the galaxy, winding up, he hoped, at one of the god worlds. His prayer had been simple. "This damn inventory control job bores me," he had prayed. "Routine work. The ship is too large, and in addition, it's overstaffed. I'm a useless standby module. Could you help me find something more creative and stimulating?" He had addressed the prayer, as a matter of course, to the intercessor. Had it failed, he would have presently readdressed the prayer, this time to the manufacturer. But the prayer had not failed. "Mr. Tall Chief," his supervisor said, entering Ben's work cubicle. "You're being transferred. How about that?" "I'll transmit a thank you prayer," Ben said, and felt good inside. It always felt good when one's prayers were listened to and answered. "When do I transfer? Soon?" He had never concealed his dissatisfaction from his supervisor. There was now even less reason to do so. "Ben Tall, Chief," his supervisor said. "The praying mantis." "Don't you pray?" Ben asked, amazed. "Only when there's no other alternative. I'm in favor of a person solving his problems on his own, without outside help. Anyhow, your transfer is valid." His supervisor dropped a document on the desk before Ben. "Small colony on a planet named Delmach O. I don't know anything about it, but I suppose you'll find it all out when you get there." He eyed Ben thoughtfully. "You're entitled to use one of the ship's nosers for a payment of 3 silver dollars. "Done," Ben said, and stood up, clutching the document. He ascended by express elevator to the ship's transmitter, which he found hard at work transacting official ship business. "Will you be having any empty periods later today?" he asked the chief radio operator. "I have another prayer, but I don't want to tie up your equipment if you'll be needing it."
"Busy all day," the chief radio operator said. "Look, Mac, we put one prayer through for you last week. Isn't that enough?"
"Anyhow I tried," Ben Tallchief mused as he left the transmitter with its hard-working crew and returned to his own quarters. "If the matter ever comes up," he thought, "I can say I did my best." But as usual, the channels were tied up by non-personal communications. He felt his anticipation grow, a creative job at last, and just when he needed it most. "Another few weeks here," he said to himself, "and I would have been pizzling away at the bottle again as in lamented former times." And of course, that's why they granted it, he realized. They knew I was nearing a break. I'd probably have wound up in the ship's brig, along with... how many were there in the brig now? Well, however many there were in there. 10 maybe? Not much for a ship this size, and with such stringent rules. From the top drawer of his dresser, he got out an unopened fifth of Peter Dawson's scotch, broke the seal, unscrewed the lid. Little libation, he told himself as he poured scotch into a Dixie cup. And celebration. The gods appreciate ceremony. He drank the scotch, then refilled the small paper cup. To further enlarge the ceremony, he got down, a bit reluctantly, his copy of the book, A.J. Spektowski's How I Rose from the Dead in My Spare Time and So Can You, a cheap copy with soft covers, but the only copy he had ever owned. Hence he had a sentimental attitude toward it. Opening at random, a highly approved method, he read over a few familiar paragraphs of the great 21st century communist theologian's Apologia Pro Vita Sua. God is not supernatural. His existence was the first and most natural mode of being to form itself. True, Ben Tallchief said to himself. As later theological investigation had proved, Spektowski had been a prophet as well as a logician. All that he had predicted had turned up sooner or later. There remained, of course, a good deal to know. For example, the cause of the manufacturers coming into being, unless one was satisfied to believe, with Spektowski, that beings of that order were self-creating and existing outside of time, hence outside of causality. But in the main, it was all there on the many times printed pages. With each greater circle, the power, good, and knowledge on the part of God weakened, so that at the periphery of the greatest circle, his good was weak, his knowledge was weak, too weak for him to observe the form destroyer, which was called into being by God's acts of form creation. The origin of the form destroyer is unclear. It is, for instance, not possible to declare whether, 1, he was a separate entity from God from the start, uncreated by God but also self-creating, as is God, or, 2, whether the form destroyer is an aspect of God, there being nothing. He ceased reading, sat sipping scotch and rubbing his forehead semi-warily. He was 42 years old and had read the book many times. His life, although long, had not added up to much, at least until now. He had held a variety of jobs, doing a modicum of service to his employers, but never ever really excelling. Maybe I can begin to excel, he said to himself, on this new assignment. Maybe this is my big chance. 42. His age had astounded him for years, and each time that he had sat so astounded, trying to figure out what had become of the young, slim man in his 20s, a whole additional year slipped by and had to be recorded, a continually growing sum which he could not reconcile with his self-image. He still saw himself, in his mind's eye, as youthful, and when he caught sight of himself in photographs, he usually collapsed. For example, he shaved now with an electric razor, unwilling to gaze at himself in his bathroom mirror. Somebody took my actual physical presence away and substituted this, he had thought from time to time. Oh well, so it went, he sighed. Of all his many meager jobs, he had enjoyed one alone, and he still meditated about it now and then. In 2105, he had operated the background music system aboard a huge colonizing ship on its way to one of the Deneb worlds. In the tape vault, he had found all of the Beethoven symphonies, mixed haphazardly in with string versions of Carmen and of Delibes, and he had played the fifth, his favorite, 1,000 times throughout the speaker complex that crept everywhere within the ship, reaching each cubicle and work area. Oddly enough, no one had complained, and he had kept on, finally shifting his loyalty to the 7th, and at last, in a fit of excitement during the final months of the ship's voyage, to the 9th, from which his loyalty never waned. Maybe what I really need is sleep, he said to himself. A sort of twilight of living, with only the background sound of Beethoven audible. All the rest a blur. No, he decided. I want to be. I want to act and accomplish something, and every year it becomes more necessary. Every year, too, it slips further and further away. The thing about the manufacturer, he reflected, is that he can renew everything. He can abort the decay process by replacing the decaying object with a new one, one whose form is perfect. And then that decays. The form destroyer gets hold of it, and presently the manufacturer replaces that. as with a succession of old bees wearing out their wings, dying and being replaced at last by new bees. But I can't do that. I decay, and the Form Destroyer has me, and it will get only worse. God, he thought, help me. But not by replacing me. That would be fine from a cosmological standpoint, but ceasing to exist is not what I'm after, and perhaps you understood this when you answered my prayer. The scotch had made him sleepy. To his chagrin, he found himself nodding. To bring himself back to full wakefulness, that was necessary. Leaping up as he strode to his portable phonograph, took a Viz record at random, and placed it on the turntable. At once the far wall of the room lit up, and bright shapes intermingled with one another, a mixture of motion and of life, but unnaturally flat. He reflexively adjusted the depth circuit. The figures began to become three-dimensional. He turned up the sound as well.
Legolas is right. We may not shoot an old man so, at unawares and unchallenged. Whatever fear or doubt be on us, watch and wait.
The bracing words of the old epic restored his perspective. He returned to his desk, reseated himself, and got out the document which his supervisor had given him. Frowning, he studied the coded information, trying to decipher it. In numbers, punch holes, and letters, it spelled out his new life, his world to come. You speak as one that knows Fangorn well. Is that so? The Viz record played on, but he no longer heard it. He had begun to get the gist of the encoded message.
What have you to say that you did not say at our last meeting?
A sharp and powerful voice said. He glanced up and found himself confronted by the gray-clad figure of Gandalf. It was as if Gandalf were speaking to him, to Ben Tallchief, calling him to account.
Or perhaps you have things to unsay, Gandalf said.
Ben rose, went over to the phonograph, and shut it off. I do not feel able at this time to answer you, Gandalf, he said to himself. There are things to be done, real things. I can't indulge myself in a mysterious, unreal conversation with a mythological character who probably never existed. The old values for me are suddenly gone. I have to work out what these damn punch holes, letters, and numbers mean. He was beginning to get the drift of it. Carefully, he replaced the lid on the bottle of scotch, twisting it tight. He would go in a noser, alone. At the colony, he would join roughly a dozen others, recruited from a variety of sources. Range 5 of skills. A Class C operation on a K-4 pay scale. Maximum time, 2 years of operation. Full pension and medical benefits, starting as soon as he arrived. An override for any instructions he had already received, hence he could go at once. He did not have to terminate his work here before leaving. And I have the 3 silver dollars for the noser, he said to himself. So that is that. Nothing else to worry about. Except. He could not discover what his job would consist of. The letters, numbers, and punch holes failed to say, or perhaps it was more correct to say that he could not get them to divulge this one piece of information, a piece he would much have wanted. But still, it looked good. I like it, he said to himself. I want it. Gandalf, he thought, I have nothing to unsay. Prayers are not often answered, and I will take this. Aloud, he said, Gandalf, you no longer exist except in men's minds, and what I have here comes from the one true and living deity who is completely real. What more can I hope for? The silence of the room confronted him. He did not see Gandalf now because he had shut the record off. Maybe someday, he continued, I will unsay this, but not yet, not now. You understand? He waited, experiencing the silence, knowing that he could begin it or end it by a mere touch of the phonograph's switch.